Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here and to see the Carriage House, which I'd never seen before. It's beautiful. And the MAA has been very welcoming to me, so I'm enjoying it. I want to talk today about mirror image symmetry from many different viewpoints, not all mathematical. In fact, let's think about mirror image symmetry in a more aesthetic sense. We are often attracted to mirror image symmetry without even thinking about it, without even being aware of it. We all recognize the Taj Mahal with its incredible symmetry, both on either side of the water. We can see the symmetry in the building. Everything about this is very symmetric. But when we're looking at it and admiring the beauty, we're not consciously thinking about that symmetry. There are other places that we see symmetry. Here's a famous painting of the Last Supper, where we can see there's a symmetry that goes right through Christ's head, the window there above him, six disciples on each side. There's paintings or tapestries on each side. Everything is symmetric in the picture. Here's a piece of music which is symmetric. You can see the mirror image symmetry there. So even in music, we find symmetry that when we're listening to it, we might not think of it as mirror image symmetry. Baseball, we have symmetry. And in fact, in most sports, we can find symmetry. Even in most games, chess or checkers, whatever, you have symmetry between the two players and their opening positions. We can even have poetry with mirror image symmetry. Here's a poem that I'll read, Love-Hate Relationship by Paula Brown. Love mimics hate, passionate always, forging forward. Unquiet rage screams poetry, tangled mercilessly. Emotion mirrors emotion, mercilessly tangled. Poetry screams rage, unquiet. Forward forging, always passionate. Hate mimics love. And so you see that the author of this poem is very much using the mirror image symmetry to make her point about love and hate. When we look at nature, we often see symmetry. Again, we may not even be conscious of it, but we're admiring the butterfly, admiring the leaves and the flowers, and it's very symmetric. We even take advantage of symmetry, our desire for symmetry, in advertisements. This is an ad I found on the web about orthodontia, which can make your teeth symmetric, because we all know that we want to have symmetric teeth shaped like a pentagon. Okay, we can even have treatments. I also found this one on the web to make our faces more symmetric. Here are four ladies, before and after photos. The improvement in facial symmetry is most notable here. Look at the differences in the shape of the ladies' faces. Imagine lines drawn through the corners of the eyes, through the eyebrows, across the bottom of the ears, through the corners of the mouth, and from the middle of the throat upwards through the head. With the addition of these lines, even the least perceptive observer will note the significant improvement of symmetry here. And I think I'm the least perceptive observer, even though I'm a topologist, because I can't actually see that the after ones are more symmetric than the before ones. So there is mirror image symmetry in all aspects of our life in one way or another. But not everything is symmetric. An example that our students are often very frustrated by are the desks. We have right-handed desks and we have left-handed desks, and we've all experienced students coming into the classroom not being able to find the one and only left-handed desk and having to have a left-handed student write at a right-handed desk. And this exhibits the problem when a person who has a particular hand that they favor is faced with a desk that has a particular hand that it favors, and you want them to match. Here we have the same problem with shoes and feet. A right foot will be happy if it has a right shoe. A left foot will be happy if it has a left shoe. These are two asymmetric objects which want to be with asymmetric objects of the same type of symmetry. Ooh, what was that? There we go. Normal light bulbs all have left-handed threads which screw into left-handed sockets. But some public buildings, notably the New York City subway, has made right-handed bulbs, especially so that light bulb thieves won't steal them. Because in the New York subway, everybody steals everything. And the thing is, if you have a right-handed bulb and you steal it, you won't be able to use it anywhere. Because it would cost you a lot of money to design a right-handed socket and much less to buy a left-handed bulb. So we said before that an asymmetric object reacts differently to another asymmetric object depending on whether they fit together or they don't. On the other hand, an asymmetric object like a foot reacts the same way to a symmetric object like a sock. So the problem comes when you have two asymmetric objects that come together. If either one is symmetric, everything is okay. Well, this is particularly noteworthy when it comes to our bodies reacting to substances. So the thing is that all biological things, like us, are made up of oriented molecules, in this case amino acids, which all spiral in one way, like this DNA. And because of the fact that our bodies are made up of these molecules that are different from their mirror images, they're going to react differently to other asymmetric molecules, just like our feet react differently to a right shoe and a left shoe. Now, I want to look at some molecules, but we maybe don't know what these mean, so I thought I would explain this chemistry notation to you. So we have lines which are in the screen, and you're imagining this hexagon is in the screen. You don't have to know what these types of atoms are or anything like that, or double bonds versus single bonds. What's really important to us here is what's happening in three-dimensional space, which is indicated by these funny bonds that are listed right here. So this one, the fact that it's a triangle, a solid triangle, means it's coming towards you. And this one, which is striped, means it's going behind. So this is a three-dimensional image because we can see this part of it is in the plane. This piece comes forward, so these two bits are out here, and this piece goes backwards. And these are mirror images of each other, and you can imagine the mirror is right here. So we'll have to keep in mind this code for forward and backward as we go. Well, one form of the molecule, carvone, which are these two that I've illustrated here, smells like caraway. And the other form smells like spearmint. And the reason they smell differently is because the olfactory receptors in our nose are made up of asymmetric molecules, just like all of the parts of our bodies are. And so those receptors are reacting differently to the two forms, just like my left foot would react differently to two different shoes. Now, you probably never really thought when you were eating a caraway bagel that if you looked in the mirror, you might be chewing some spearmint gum. But anyway, in fact, in the book, Through the Looking Glass, Alice says to her kitty, "How would you like to live in Looking Glass House, kitty? I wonder if they'd give you milk there. Perhaps Looking Glass milk isn't good to drink." And in fact, that's true. Looking Glass milk isn't good to drink because since we only have left-handed amino acids, the cat wouldn't be able to digest Looking Glass milk because the cat's enzymes couldn't break it down. And in fact, Lewis Carroll knew this, and it was at the time that he wrote this, this was sort of hot news in the science world, and he was communicating it through the novel, the fact that we're reacting differently to the two forms of a molecule. This is particularly important when it comes to medications. And so here are some medications. Ibuprofen, which I think we're all familiar with, is an anti-inflammatory. It's different from its mirror image, but the mirror image doesn't do anything. It passes through our bodies. So we have the one form that cures our headaches or cramps or whatever. The other one is irrelevant. On the other hand, naproxen, which costs more than ibuprofen, is an anti-inflammatory, where its mirror image is toxic. So why does it cost more? Because the chemical company has to separate those two to not give us the toxic one so we don't all die when we have arthritis. Darvon is a bit out of fashion at this point as a painkiller, but it has a mirror form which is used as a cough suppressant. And notice that the company calls it Darvon and Novrad, which are mirror forms of the word. So even a pharmaceutical company can have a sense of humor when it comes to mirror image symmetry. So when drugs are synthesized, not using biological substances, they are created in a 50-50 mix of the two forms of the mirror image. And of course, if a molecule has mirror image symmetry, the two forms are the same. But if they're not the same, and one might have dangerous side effects like naproxen, then indeed it costs the chemical company, the pharmaceutical company, a lot of money to separate them to avoid those dangerous effects. So pharmaceutical companies would rather have medications which do have mirror image symmetry, so they don't have to worry about that. Now, we're trying to think about what does it mean to say something has mirror image symmetry. And to think about that, let's look at a glove. Now, most gloves that you buy these days are ambidextrous. And because this one is ambidextrous, I drew a heart on the hand because there's some saying that has to do with having your heart in your palm. So what you can see is that this is a left-handed glove. The back doesn't have a heart. You have to put your heart in the palm, in your palm. But if I take off this glove and shake it out and put it on the other hand, it becomes a right-handed glove. I have my palm in my hand. And so what we're seeing is that from the point of view of my hands, this glove is the same as its mirror image. And so when we're thinking about do gloves have mirror image symmetry, particularly a rubber glove, stretchy glove like that, we want to think about what we mean by that. So our hands react the same way to a glove, whether it's my right hand or my left hand. And so from the point of view of my hand, the glove is a symmetric object. But if I looked at this glove when it's looking like this in the mirror, it would become its mirror image, which wouldn't look the same. So should we say that the glove has mirror image symmetry or not? Well, that depends on your point of view. So let's look at this from a geometry point of view. So we all remember taking geometry and learning about triangles and congruence and all that. Geometry is the study of rigid shapes. And so when we're looking at something from the point of view of geometry, we're thinking about objects as being rigid. And we want to know if an object is the same or different from its mirror image. So here's a picture of an object that you don't use on your in your daily life. I do a little bit, but most people don't, which is a knot that's sort of in the shape of a flower. This is the knot. This is its mirror image. You can tell it's its mirror image because every crossing has been reversed. So here this piece goes over, here it goes under. Every single one, this one goes over, this one goes under. So this is the mirror image of that. Okay, you can imagine the mirror is like the plane of the screen, and going over means coming in front, going under means going behind. Now these two look different, but in fact, if you take the first one, and you have to do this with your brain, you rotate it by 90 degrees. So this petal, if you want to think of it as a petal, you rotate it by 90 degrees, it comes up there. And here it is, it goes over, over, it comes up there, it goes over, over. And the one that goes behind is over here, and so on. So this object, as a geometric object, that is, as a rigid object, is in fact identical to its mirror image. It's just that you had to turn it. But it's an object, you can turn it. So from a geometric point of view, getting back to our glove, it doesn't have mirror image symmetry. Because if we think of it as a rigid object, which can't be turned inside out the way I did it, right now I've made it into a right-handed glove, it will always be a right-handed glove as a metallic rigid glove. And it will be different from what a left-handed glove looks like, which you would see in the mirror if you held that one up. Let's go back to a molecule. So you remember I told you how to look at this. So this comes out of the screen, This striped one goes behind the screen, and the two just straight line segments are in the screen. Okay? So I have a little model of this thing, which might fall apart. And you can see that all of these balls represent different groups of atoms here. And you can look at this, and this red one is in front, the green one is the striped one, it's in back, and this is the H. And if you try to make it go into this position, you would say, well, the black one was, did I turn, sorry, which one was which? Here, the red one is the H, the black one is the CO2H, and it still has to be in the back. Oh, maybe it bothers you that it looks different, CO2H, HO2C. The point is it's the C that's attached. And just because we read things left to right, they look different. But you can think of this as just like a collection of beads where the C is attached. Okay. The problem is that if I want to keep that one, the black one in the back and the green one in the front, there's no way that I can get the red one from being on the left to being on the right. No matter how I turn it and lose the leg, it will always stay the same unless I take off the legs and put them on differently. But that's not allowed. Okay, so this is an example of a molecule which is different from its mirror image geometrically. And in fact, this molecule is rigid as a molecule. It's small and it's rigid. So it really is different from its mirror image. And it's one of those ones that, you know, you could react differently to it depending on if you took it as a medication. Okay, so here we have a definition. An object is said to be geometrically chiral, that's how you pronounce that, if it cannot be rigidly superimposed, that is, rotating it, moving around, onto its mirror image. And otherwise, it's said to be geometrically achiral. Now, right away, when people see this, they become confused. And the reason they become confused is because we're all used to, you add the letter A, and it makes it not. Right? Like one person's political, they care about politics. One person's apolitical, they do not care about politics. So this looks like it's backwards. It's geometrically chiral if it cannot be superimposed on its mirror image, and otherwise it's geometrically achiral. So even though I'm telling you this now, you're going to forget it and become confused later. And so in order to avoid being confused, I have a mnemonic trick, which is the etymology. So the word chiral comes from the ancient Greek, which is written like this, which I'm going to mispronounce as kir, right? Chi, epsilon, iota, rho. Maybe that's kir, I don't know. But what it means is it means hand. And so the idea is that a hand is not, my right hand is not the same as my left hand. No matter how I turn it or twist it, it's not the same. So when I say something is chiral, it is a positive trait of being like a hand. And when I say it's achiral, just like apolitical, it's not like a hand. Okay, so that's the way to remember this as I talk, because I am going to be using this word. And we need to remember which is which between chiral and achiral. Okay, so we have this definition. We saw that molecule is geometrically different from its mirror image as a rigid object. So that's an example of a molecule which is geometrically chiral. And we saw that this knot is geometrically the same as a mirror image. So it's geometrically achiral. All right, but we saw before that what's important for a molecule is not really how it looks. It's what it does, how it reacts with other molecules, how it behaves with other asymmetric molecules. And while this is a nice definition, it doesn't necessarily coincide with the definition that we want that captures this kind of molecular reaction. And so we have a chemical definition. And we're going to say a molecule is chemically chiral, remember, like a hand, if it cannot transform itself into its mirror image. On a chemical level, it can't change into its mirror image. Otherwise, it's said to be chemically achiral. So before we had the geometric definition, now we have the chemical definition. They're different because this is a definition that has to do with behavior. It doesn't have to do with the way it looks. It has to do with behavior. And in case any of you are chemists, I should say, chemists don't modify this with the adjective chemically. They just say it's chiral or achiral. So in any case, so here's an example of a molecule which is chemically achiral, because if you imagine a mirror here, this is in the back, this is in the back. They're exactly the same. But remember, the C is where it's attached. This is in the front, this is in the front, this is in the plane. So this is exactly the same as its mirror image, and so it is indeed chemically achiral. Okay, so what we've seen before is geometrically achiral, which means as a rigid object, it's identical to its mirror image. And if that's the case, then chemically, whatever its properties are, it's identical to its mirror image, it will be chemically the same as its mirror image. So we have this implication. We can think about this in terms of sets with Venn diagrams, as the set of all things that are geometrically achiral is going to be contained in the set of all things that are chemically achiral. But could there be anything in here? Is it possible to have a molecule which is chemically achiral but not geometrically achiral? Sort of like our glove, right? Our glove was not chemically, but clothing-wise, achiral. I could wear it on either hand, but it's not geometrically achiral. So that's the question we have here. And before we answer this, let's remember Lord Kelvin, who in a certain sense was both an important chemist and an important knot theorist, because he helped to make the original knot tables. He was the one who coined this term, using the ancient Greek term. He said, I call any geometrical figure or group of points chiral and say it has chirality if its image in a plane mirror, ideally realized, cannot be brought to coincide with itself. So this is in the more flowery language of the 1880s compared to our definition of geometrically achiral or chiral, but it's the same. This corresponds to this geometric definition of whether something is the same or different from its mirror image. And chemists will often use the word chiral for both Lord Kelvin's definition, which is the geometric chirality, and the experimental notion of, is it the same? Does it behave the same as its mirror image? So we're back to this question of, are they the same or different? And so now I want to show you an example to show you that they're actually different. So here's a molecule. But the colors don't mean anything. They're just pretty. We have to remember what these symbols mean, though. So first of all, let's start here. This is a horizontal hexagon. It's sort of hard to color it in such a way to see that it's coming out. And this one is a vertical hexagon. Okay, and I do have a model of that here. Here we have the vertical, and we have the horizontal. So they're perpendicular like that. And then we also have So this is sticking out. This is going back because it's horizontal, whereas this one, they're both in the plane because it's vertical. This here is going back. So this whole piece is behind the screen. Similarly, this is going back, and it's behind the screen. Now, one thing you'll notice is that I call those propellers because actually they rotate here simultaneously. So this whole thing is rotating, and this whole thing is rotating. And so I'm going to refer to them as propellers. And otherwise, the molecule is rigid. So you just have this rotation going on with your, like, propeller plane or whatever on either side. All right. Now, I want to think about this in terms of people. I know that chemists don't draw faces on their molecules. But I think it's easier to think about this molecule in terms of people. Because what I'm going to do, instead of thinking, having to keep in mind the fact that this stripes means it's behind the screen, is I'm going to imagine this woman over here is behind the screen, and she's reaching out with her left hand to hold on to that oxygen. Okay, and in fact, she only has a left hand. So that's why she has an L on her dress, because she only has a left hand. And this woman only has a right hand, And she's reaching out and holding that oxygen with her right hand. And what's important here, as I said, is that this molecule is completely rigid except for this rotation thing that's happening. So that left-handed woman is always going to be standing there over there with her left hand out. She's not going to move her left hand backwards or whatever. She's always holding out her left hand. She's not going to grow a right arm. And similarly, this woman is always going to have her right hand forward, which means these women are different, right? If you only have a left hand and your twin only has a right hand, no one will confuse you. I don't know if that's a good strategy, but okay. So let's see what's going to happen here. I just said that. Let's look at the mirror image. Okay, so here's a mirror, and their dresses have been reversed to help us remember that they're mirror images. And what you see is that she goes here, the horizontal one is there, the vertical one is here, and the red-headed one, literally red-headed, is there. Okay, so we see her in her mirror image. And what we want to see now is that this molecule is chemically achiral. Okay, so again, chemically achiral means chemically it can change into its mirror image. Okay, so we want to see that. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to imagine that the whole molecule is rotated through a horizontal axis like this. I mean, it's floating in solution. It can rotate. So just the whole thing is just going to be rotated like that through that axis. And when we do that, my artistic ability might not be so great, but they're lying down. Okay, so what's good about this is you may remember, let's actually just go back for a second, is that what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to take the original molecule to make it look exactly like the mirror image. That's what I'm trying to do. And so that means that I want this hexagon, right? I want that hexagon to come over here and be horizontal. And I want this horizontal hexagon to come over here and be vertical. And then this woman, although she has a backwards arm dress, has her left arm forward. So then this woman will go into her position. The fact that she's a redhead and she's a greenhead doesn't matter. And this one will be over here. So my goal is to take the molecule on the left, get the molecule on the right. And so I like the idea that if I rotate it by 90 degrees, the horizontal becomes vertical and the vertical becomes horizontal. So let's go back to that. So that happens. I rotate it by 90 degrees, and when I rotate the vertical, it's horizontal. I rotate the horizontal, it's vertical. But the bad part is the propellers are now lying on their backs because they were vertical, and now we rotated them, and they're on their backs. So that, you know, this one is left-handed, and she's lying on her back. She's still reaching up with her left hand. However, that's okay because the propellers spin. So they just spin. They spin and they spin back to their standing up positions and everything is okay. So what I've done is I took this molecule, rotated the whole thing by 90, so I get this thing is horizontal when it used to be vertical. The horizontal one becomes vertical and they spin back so that red-headed woman becomes this green-headed woman with her left hand forward and the other one also. So this thing that I've just illustrated is chemically possible. In fact, it chemically happens all the time because it rotates in solution and the two propellers rotate all the time. So it and its mirror image are identical from a chemical point of view. On the other hand, let's think about this from a geometric point of view. So from a geometric point of view, what we're doing is we're freezing them. We're imagining this is made of metal now. No more rotating. Okay. So this red-headed woman is parallel to the adjacent hexagon because they're both vertical. Okay. Over here, the blue-headed woman is perpendicular to the adjacent hexagon. Okay. So we're keeping that in mind. And this thing is made of metal. It's not rotating. I mean, the whole thing could rotate, but the propellers are no longer allowed to rotate. Okay, the woman with her left hand forward will always have her left hand forward. The woman with the right hand forward will always have her right hand forward. And the woman who's parallel to the adjacent hexagon will always be parallel to the adjacent hexagon. Well, what this means is There's no way to get the left-handed woman into this position, because you can't take two parallel things that are made of metal into two perpendicular things. And she can't turn into this woman, because this woman only has a right hand. That woman only has a left hand. So this shows us that this molecule, while it's chemically achiral, the same as its mirror image, is geometrically chiral, different from its mirror image. So back to our Venn diagram, we see that actually these are different. This is a proper subset of that. Okay. So mathematically, how are we going to characterize the concept of chirality in chemistry? What we see is that geometric chirality treats all molecules, all objects, as if they're rigid. In chemistry, not all molecules are rigid, but not all molecules are flexible, and not all molecules have pieces that rotate. So they're all different things. And so we could treat everything as rigid. That wouldn't be right. We could treat everything as flexible. That wouldn't be right. But we know that the truth is somewhere in between. And the truth is going to depend on the particular chemical properties that are different from what we see when we look at a model. So what we want to do right now is leave the geometric realm, treating everything as rigid, and enter the topological realm, treating everything as flexible. So topology is the study of flexible shapes, just like geometry is the study of rigid shapes. And from a topological point of view, two things would be the same if one thing could be deformed to another thing. So from a topological point of view, my glove is identical to its mirror image. Because I deformed it, I took it off, I put it back on the other hand, that was topologically possible. So if I'm going to look at things from a topology point of view, I have to allow everything to be completely flexible. Okay, so we have our definition. An object is said to be topologically chiral, like a hand, if it cannot be deformed to its mirror image, assuming complete flexibility, independent of how much it really is flexible or not. And otherwise, if you could somehow deform it, it's topologically achiral. So in this case, for this molecule that we looked at, it is topologically and chemically achiral, but geometrically chiral. So this is an example of where topology more accurately characterizes the chemistry than geometry does. Okay, so sometimes it's going to be one more topologically, sometimes it's going to be more geometrically. Okay, this is an example which is of a molecule that is topologically and chemically achiral, but geometrically chiral. And I'm going to show you this, but I also want to say it has a further property than the other one. Well, let's say that after, sorry. So this molecule is a pair of linked rings. And what you can see when you look at this one, before you take the mirror image, it has a little tail where it's H3C, which over here is CH3. Again, it's because the C is attached. But it also has the ability to rotate those two hexagons on the top can rotate. So here's the original form, here's the mirror form. What we see is that the crossings change. This overcrossing becomes an undercrossing. The tail, which is here, is now sticking out over here. And the two hexagons, which are slanted one way, are now slanted the other way. But what we can see when we look at this, if we imagine my two rings like this, is that this can turn. Okay, and when the green one, the bottom one, turns, it goes exactly in the position of the mirror image. And so that's allowed. And then at the top, you have those two hexagons, but they can turn. And when they can turn, they become these two hexagons. And so we can go from the original form to the mirror image chemically and topologically, but not geometrically. And let me say one further thing about this. One further thing about this is an example where no matter what you do, you cannot get this molecule to be in a position which you could then say freeze and have it be the same as its mirror image. This is in contrast to, this is in contrast to this molecule, which again, ignoring chemical constraints, if I just imagine that it's made completely of rubber, I could smash it into the screen. I could make it be completely flat in the screen, and then it would be its own mirror image. So this molecule has that property of being topologically and chemically achiral, but geometrically chiral. But if we imagine it were really 100% flexible, we could put it in this lovely position, which was completely symmetric and would be the same as its mirror image. By contrast, this molecule, no matter how much you make it 100% flexible, no matter what you do, we can prove, using topology, that there's no way for it to get into a position which you could then say freeze and have it be the same as its mirror image. So this is an even more powerful, in a certain sense, example of how the topology and the chemical achirality are the same, but the geometric chirality is different. So now what we've seen, this relationship, if a molecule is topologically chiral, that means no matter how much you deform it as a flexible object, it will never become into its mirror image. Then it will be chemically chiral, because any motion that a molecule can make is a kind of deformation. So a molecule will never have one bond break through another like that, just as a deformation will never allow one part to go through another. So if an object is topologically chiral, if a molecule is, then it must be chemically chiral. Furthermore, if we take a molecule like the one that fell apart and now fell on the floor, if we take a molecule which is chiral because of its geometry, like that little one with the balls, if I heat it enough, I can force it to change into its mirror image. But if I take a molecule which is chiral because of its topology, like that link, no matter how much you heat it, it will never turn into its mirror image. Because in order to turn into its mirror, well, no, not like that link, because that was achiral. But if I take one which is chiral because of its topology, if I heat it enough, it will never turn into its mirror image, because the only way it could turn into its mirror image is if you had pieces of it pass through other pieces. And what this is telling us is that topological chirality is a stronger, more enduring type of chirality for a molecule than geometric chirality. So the concept of topological chirality not only is useful in proving certain molecules are chiral, but it's useful in telling us they'll remain chiral. They won't, if you put a lot of heat in the system, they won't change into their mirror image. So this is further, it has a further importance in chemistry. So, but not every molecule which is topologically achiral is chemically achiral. So that little molecule we started with, which was rigid, and which we said is geometrically chiral, it's not the same as its mirror image, and chemically chiral, because chemically it is rigid, it can't do anything. If we thought about it topologically, we would see that we could grab these two things, this one's behind the screen, this one's in the screen, and just go like this. You have to make that noise. And when you do it, they would switch places and you would get the mirror image. So this is just to let us know that we shouldn't trust topology for everything. When you're working with a small rigid molecule, the topology will tell you it's the same as its mirror image, but the geometry is what's important in that case. So if we put our concepts together, we have this diagram. Topologically chiral implies chemically chiral, which implies geometrically chiral, because this is, you cannot deform it no matter what. You cannot get the mirror image. Means it can't change into its mirror image. Means it's not geometrically identical to its mirror image as a rigid object. And this second list of things is, of course, the contrapositive of the top list. So that's also true. But what we've seen with these examples is that none of the reverse implications hold. So the thing we might want, which is the middle thing, we're stuck wedging it in between the two and not being able to get closer than that in terms of characterizing it in this way. So here we have a bigger Venn diagram where I put this molecule, which was topologically achiral by making that noise, okay, but it's not chemically achiral. So we have three different types of molecules here. Okay. And so let me skip this one. Let's go on to here. Okay. So how do we show that a molecule is topologically chiral? So what I think I've convinced you, or hopefully I've convinced you, that topological chirality is a useful concept for chemists because it implies chemical chirality for certain molecules. And furthermore, if you heat them, they won't become their mirror image, so it's really enduring and so on. But how can you prove, how can you show that a molecule is topologically chiral? Okay, let's say I have this knot. This is an actual molecule that has been synthesized. It's a knot, and here we have it, like this. And I want to know, is it the same as its mirror image? Suppose that I take this, and we know the mirror image means all the crossings are switched. So I have that one. They also turn orange when they get switched. So you have this, okay? And you want to know, can I deform this to this? And I'm going to assume complete flexibility. And I'm going to take it, and I'm going to bend it around and so on. And then I'm going to look at it, and they're not the same. And I'm going to do this, and eventually I'm going to give up and say, I can't do this. But maybe if I kept at it for another 10 minutes or for another 10 years, maybe I would have done it. So just because I can't mess it around and pull it and so on and get the other doesn't actually mean anything. So how can I ever prove that something is topologically chiral, that it can't be done? You know, if you're proving geometrically chiral, it's not hard because you have a rigid object. You can only look at it from so many angles. But topologically, there are infinitely many deformations you can do. So what can we do? We need to use techniques from topology. And so one technique from topology that works for this molecule is what's called a knot polynomial. So the idea of this is every knot, whether it happens to be a molecule or not, is assigned a special kind of polynomial, which has the property that if two knots have different polynomials, then one can't be deformed to the other. Okay, and this isn't any, you can't just make up any polynomial you want. This polynomial is specially designed to have this property. And then what you do is you compute the polynomial for the original one and for its mirror image, and you see what they are. And here you see that all of the exponents became negative. And maybe you're about to say, well, then it's not a polynomial because polynomials are supposed to have positive integer exponents. But that's true. But we topologists use language loosely. It's really what we call a Laurent polynomial, but we don't bother saying that. We just call it a polynomial, but you can have positive and negative exponents. And what you see is that because these are different and the polynomial was specially created to do this, we can conclude that the molecules are different. And so maybe when you look at this, you notice, well, these just became the negative of those, and that's not a coincidence. In fact, whenever I have the polynomial of a knot and its mirror image, the exponents will switch between negative and positive. And in fact, when they wouldn't be different is if the polynomial was palindromic with respect to negative and positive. Mirror image symmetry with respect to those exponents. So that's kind of interesting. But the problem here is that when I have different molecules, there'll be different techniques which will work to show that they are topologically different, if they are indeed topologically different. And so these polynomials work well for knots and for links, but not for everything. So here is a Möbius strip. And I have one here. And what I have two different ones. They may not look different at first, but actually, if you start over, then you can take one, and you put a half twist this way, like I go down like this, and I join it, versus I start with one, And that one I went like this, so now I'm going to go the opposite, like that, and then I'm going to join it. And they're different. And not only are they different, I don't know if you can see that they're different, but it can be shown topologically that there's no way to deform this one to this one. Now, of course, you can't make a molecule that's a Mobius strip because it's a surface and the molecule is not a surface. However, there's what's called a molecular Mobius ladder, which has, in fact, been synthesized. Here it is. It's a long chain, and it has that twist in the front that we saw. And it's not solid. These are double bonds, okay? And this is actually, you can call it a three-rung ladder because they start with a ladder, and they put a twist in it, and they join the ends instead of starting with a strip and putting a twist in it and joining the ends. And here it is, with the cross going down like that, with the front one goes down, and in the mirror image, the front one goes up. And they're exactly the same. And the question is, I mean, they're the same except for that cross. Just because we couldn't take one Mobius strip and deform it to the other doesn't mean that we couldn't take this structure, which is really just like a graph. It's not solid, and deform it to this. Because when you're trying to deform it, you're allowed, ignoring chemical constraints, you're allowed to push it through itself and so on, which you can't do with these surfaces. So it's not apparent whether or not this is topologically the same as its mirror image. But in fact, it was shown using techniques from topology that I'm not going to show you here that they're in fact different. Here's another example. Oh, before I give you another example, why do people make molecules in the shape of a knot or in the shape of a Mobius strip? And the answer is, originally, the answer is that chemists try to force themselves to be creative, think outside of the box, and come up with new techniques of synthesis. And in order to do this, they have targets of synthesis. Let's try to make a knot. What can we do? And the idea is, you may not have any applications in mind. What are we going to do with this knotted molecule? But in fact, often after the fact, they turn out to be useful. So, for example, when you have a molecular link, which can be synthesized, like the one I showed you, these are being proposed to be used to create even smaller chips that could go into all of our electronic devices, because you have this teeny little link, and it could be a switch depending on which way it goes. Okay, so this is an example of something which was synthesized just as a target of synthesis, but it could have a use. And in addition, it's been found recently that rubber actually has tangling in the molecules, and so they're trying to use, material scientists are trying to use knotted molecules to create more flexible surfaces that can be used for various things, modeling it off of rubber. And so therefore, this is an example of, you don't think it's going to be useful, you think you're just trying to be creative, and yet it could be useful. So let's go back and have another couple of examples. This is triple-layer naphthalenophane. These are naphthalenes. They're also known as mothballs, those pairs of hexagons. And this is another example of a molecule. It's triple-layer because there are three different layers there, which was also shown to be topologically chiral. I developed a technique that is different than the ones that were used for those to prove that different types of molecules are topologically chiral. This is what's called the Simmons-Paquette molecule, and this is ferrocenophane, and these look maybe a little more symmetric, but it turns out that both of these are topologically chiral using the techniques that I developed, which I'm not going to tell you about right now, but they are in my book. And here's another collection of molecules that I showed were topologically chiral. There are actually four of them here. This ball, which some people know as a buckyball, is a fullerene, and this is called a cap that's attached to it. So here's the original form, and here's the mirror image. Okay, it's a little hard to see, but you can maybe see that the hexagons and pentagons are turned the opposite way in those two. And the cap, you see the mirror image of the cap. And here, between here and here, we kept the buckyball the same, but we just took the mirror image of the cap. So you can see, like here we have the M-E-O here, whereas there it was in the front, where it's again listed as O-M-E because it's the O that's attached. So there are actually four different forms of this molecule, which are all topologically different. So that is, even if you imagine you could take this and smash it through that, right? It's not a surface. It's just this kind of structure. They're still different. And this is actually an example of a group of chemists who I had never met who wrote to me and said, okay, you wrote this book. Tell us, are these things the same or different topologically? And I could show that they were different. So this gives you the sense that there are all these molecules out there with interesting forms, and more of them are being created. And so we need more and more topological techniques to be able to show whether or not they're different if they have some flexibility to be able to be deformed. And so a lot of topology, which was originally thought of as being very pure, like the development of knot polynomials, actually turns out to be useful in terms of this. And that's the kind of thing I'm doing. Thank you.